Allen's Investigate, airing live on the United Public Radio Network, 105.3 FM in New Orleans. Yay, and welcome to the Allen's Investigate with me, Shona Allen.
And I'm Gary Allen, the Cockney Bard.
We're broadcasting live on the United Public Radio Network 105.3 and 107.7 FM from New Orleans and on Roku. Now, this week, we're going to be exploring energy healing. What is it exactly? Where does it come from? And do we all have access to this ability? So I thought we'd start off in simple terms to find out what is energy? What is it exactly? Well, energy is the stuff that makes things happen. It's what allows objects to move, machines to work, and lights to shine. Energy can take different forms, like, for example, when you kick a ball, that's kinetic energy, or when you stretch a rubber band, that's potential energy, or store energy, for example, in a battery. Now, energy gives the ability to do stuff or cause changes in the world. Energy can be transformed from one thing to another, but it cannot be created or destroyed. Everything in the universe is energy, including us.
Indeed it is.
Now, Nikola Tesla said, if you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. Light itself is energy. So it's really everywhere. So I thought, should we begin in Egypt, ancient Egypt?
Yeah, why not? Let's begin in Egypt.
That's my favourite subject.
Yeah.
So if we look, there's a set of papyrus that were found called the Ebers Papyrus, which is a set of medical texts dated around 1550 BC. The texts reveal a complex and sophisticated approach to healing the sick, where both remedies are combined with ritual practices and spells. Magic is effective together with medicine. Medicine is effective together with magic, writes the scribe. So we see here the ancient approach to combining the physical with this unseen energy as a complementary treatment. And they would have viewed this as something that goes together. You wouldn't have one without the other. Like, for example, we see modern doctors today will give you a tablet if you're feeling ill. They were sort of looking at the healing modality as viewing the subject as a whole being. So they weren't just treating one ailment, they were healing the whole. So I think that's quite interesting. And where magic is prescribed as a treatment, it typically involves three elements. Spells were recited, after which there was the laying on of hands, either directly on the afflicted person or on a model representing them if treatment was being performed at a distance. So that's rather like what we'd call absent or distance healing. During which the patient was anointed with wine, water, and oil.
When you say a model, not like today.
Not a fashion model, no.
Not a fashion model, no.
No, okay. Dear. Yeah. But magic today, of course, has a great misunderstanding in many, because when you think of magic, people think of Paul Daniels and magic tricks, for example. But far from being either a trick for entertainment or mumbo jumbo, magic is actually just a label for a way of working with energy using the natural elements of Earth. Now, while Greek physicians like Hippocrates, where we get the Hippocratic Oath, and Galen are often regarded as forefathers of modern scientific medicine, to the ancient Greeks themselves, it is worth noting that they themselves gave that accolade to Egypt. In Homer's The Odyssey, it states, "In Egypt, men are more skilled in medicine than any of humankind." So that really says something, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting.
In the Ebers Papyrus, it states, "Lay the hands on him and the pain will leave him." So for at least over 3,000 years, a natural and powerful form of healing has been used by humans upon one another. So that's quite interesting, isn't it? Now, the ancient Persians' life was greatly influenced by their adherence to living within energetic cycles through ceremonies, cosmology, and nature, much like the Essenes, a people that lived with respect to universal principles and understanding of energetic laws. The Essenes lived in a way that held sacred to the divine and a respect for the purity of the body, which held a greater connection to universal energy that held healing power. Now, in the Bible, there are a number of mentions about laying hands on others. For example, Mark 16:15-18 says, "Whoever believes and is baptized will lay hands on the sick and they will recover." And Jesus' most common practice in healing is touch, often described as laying his hands on the one to be healed. Matthew 9:18, Mark 5:23, 7:32, 6:5, 8:22-25, and Luke 13:13.
Interesting.
In Acts, his apostles heal with touch too. Ananias lays his hands on Paul 3 days after the Damascus Road encounter to restore his sight, and that's in Acts 9:12 and 17. And Paul's hands in turn become channels of extraordinary miracles. And that's Acts 14:3, 19:11, including the laying on of his hands on a sick man in Malta to heal him, Acts 28:8. So we can see in the Bible, and that's by no means all of the quotations from it either, that's just a small selection. So we can see the healing and the laying on of hands using the therapeutic touch, channeling the divine energy, if you like, was actually commonplace in those days.
It's interesting that they don't very often mention this, do you? You never hear of it, do you? Healing in Egypt and that kind of stuff. So it's when you talk to anyone about healing, they always straight away they think of Jesus as being the healer, don't they?
Yeah, but you can see that his apostles also clearly were using it and utilizing it, so that's quite interesting.
It is.
Now, the Greeks used therapeutic touch in their temples to Asclepius, the god of medicine, for healing the sick. The playwright Aristophanes wrote that the practice restored a blind man's sight. The god Asclepius, of course, being the figure of a man holding a rod with a serpent coiled around it. I think he's quite well known, isn't he? And of course, you've got
the NHS one, isn't it?
And exactly, that's used for medicine nowadays, isn't it? Along with the caduceus sometimes as well, which is a similar principle, but only you've got two snakes winding round the pole instead. And in medieval European accounts also mention the touching with the hands as a way to heal all sorts of disorders and ailments. And societies around the world have conceived of a universal life energy or divine force that not only runs through our bodies, but through all of nature. Different cultures have given this energy differing names, from chi, prana, odic force, mana, orgone, and etheric energy. So if we move on to yoga, yoga is obviously a very, very ancient practice. Now, when we think of yoga, we normally think of celebrities going off doing exercises and everything and all this kind of thing, which not quite what it is.
No.
Now, yoga, the word itself, is derived from the Sanskrit root yuj, meaning to join, to yoke, or to unite. So the key is in unite. Its origin can be traced to over 5,000 years ago and was first mentioned in the Rig Veda, a sacred text. Yoga is a physical, mental, and spiritual practice aimed at creating a union between body, mind, and spirit, as well as between self and universal consciousness. Pranayama in particular focuses on breathing exercises to control the flow of prana, or vital life force. Chakras were first mentioned in the Vedas, ancient sacred texts dating from 1500 to 1000 BC. Chakra in Sanskrit means wheel and refers to energy points in the body thought to be spinning disks of energy that correspond to bundles of nerves, organs, and areas of our energetic body that affect our emotional and physical well-being. Each of the main seven chakras has a corresponding color and specific area of the spine all the way to the crown chakra on the head. Now, Kundalini, this one's been sort of bandied about quite a lot as well. Kundalini, meaning coiled snake, is a form of divine energy believed to be located at the base of the spine and references the ancient belief that each person carries divine energy. Mm. And you'll find lots of references in the Upanishads, for example, where they talk about the divine dwelling in the house, in the temple, which yeah. means the body.
And it's also interesting that there's 33 vertebrae in the spine, isn't there?
Which lends us or moves us on to touching upon Freemasonry as well,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah,
so
it does, yeah.
You can see that a number of these cultures, etc., had a specific understanding.
And also, if you like the 33 mirrors, you can put it into an eight, can't you? So it's never ending.
Exactly.
Never ending, yeah.
So they believe basically to be three fundamental, what they call nadis, or energy pathways in the body, the Ida, Pingala, and the Sushumna, that look not unlike the Greek caduceus, interestingly. So you've got the vertical pole, which you could say is the central point, and then you've got basically two what look like serpents entwining. So again, we've got this idea of the caduceus yeah. with two serpents on a pole, which I think is quite interesting because it may suggest interconnection and meetings of various different cultures over time. Now, as I said, these are the nadis are energy pathways in the body, and they basically look like the serpents entwining. And so the serpents, the two serpentine energies of Ida and Pingala, intertwine up and down the body around the chakras, and the Sushumna apparently traveling vertically up the spine through each chakra. The goal is to bring all in balance and in harmony. Now, I'd just like to point out as well with the serpents, that serpents were actually ancient symbols of divine energy and wisdom. So it's not necessarily from the biblical perspective of the naughty snake on the tree of knowledge tempting Eve with the apple. That's not quite the case to the ancients. They didn't view it quite that way.
Mm.
Now, moving on from the Indian understanding of energies in these healing therapies, I'll move on to Reiki. Now, the word Reiki comes from the Japanese rei, meaning universal, and ki, meaning life force, not unlike qi in the Chinese understanding.
Qi.
It's energy that inhabits all living things. Now, the practitioner acts as a conduit of this energy using palm or hand healing and accesses this universal energy via attuned symbols. The energy flows from the hands into the subject, within the physical body and into the subtle body, chakras and energy meridians. The idea is that the practitioner facilitates balance within the client's spiritual, mental, emotional and physical body, helping the body to heal itself naturally. The modern system of Reiki was founded by Dr. Makao Usui. Born into a Buddhist family, he received extensive education in martial arts and Kiki, which is the Japanese form of Qigong. It is told that he discovered Reiki when he traveled to Mount Kurama for meditation and fasting, and he experienced a spiritual awakening in recognizing his ability to channel Reiki energy and share it with the world. Reiki actually is now one of the top complementary therapies actually in the USA. And the benefits of Reiki and healing in general are astounding. Clients have reported experiencing many benefits, from pain relief to help with stress, headache, nausea, insomnia, to depression and many other ailments. So I think, although I've only touched on a few of the different cultures and understandings of healing using energy, there are many, many diverse things. And I think we could probably dedicate hours and hours to it if we were really deep diving it.
Mm.
But the one common denominator with all of them is that they are channeling a universal life energy. And the idea is that it actually brings your body into balance and harmony. So what are your thoughts on that, Gary? Because you do healing, don't you?
Yeah, I've done healing for many years now. Yeah, it's a very interesting subject because, you know, people often, especially skeptics, say that it's a placebo effect, where people are believing they are getting better, but of course they're not. It's the same as if you give someone a pill and they say, oh yeah, the pill worked wonderful, and the pill was maybe sugar or something like that. But it's very interesting, you know. And I think the one of the main things is that when you're doing healing on anybody, you know, you must never say that you can cure them. That's very important. And you know, because no one knows if they can cure anybody anyway. You know, you just taking that subject, giving them some healing, and hope that their own body can repair itself. And in which case, in many cases, it doesn't work, or it does work. So you don't know. You know, you don't know until you give someone healing whether it's going to work or not. You know, I mean, like myself. You know, I mean, I do suffer from depression, don't I? You know, I've got some serious depression sometimes. But
I think Churchill called it his black dog. Yeah, I mean,
you
moment,
know, that's the point. You know, you know, people say, well, why can't you heal yourself then? You know, that's one of the things. You know, you can perform miracles. There's no doubt about it. I've got a few cases that I'm going to go into in a little bit, but we'll see. But there's also, if you go back, you know, to the spiritualist movement, there was Harry Edwards. He was an extremely famous English spiritual healer, and he rose to prominence in the mid-20th century. He used a combination of hands-on healing, spiritual guidance, and prayer to treat individuals. Now, prayer is an interesting thing, isn't it? Because, you know, many people believe in the power of prayer and, you know, send it out and across the airwaves. And also absent healing as well. You know, can you believe it that, I mean, I've done that before now, and you've sent healing across the water, maybe to France or America, to someone who desperately needed some help, and you send it, and they seem to receive it, and they get better from it. When, you know, so it's marvellous. You know, who knows how it works? It travels through the airways. I don't know.
Well, it is interesting, isn't it? I mean, I remember a friend of ours. He was quite an elderly gentleman himself, but his father actually had a brain tumour. And I remember him telling us about this, that he was actually in hospital and near death. And I think in sort of desperation, they got some Christian scientists to come in and heal him. And they gave him healing by, you know, way of the laying on of hands, and also prayer as well. And amazingly, he did actually get better, which baffled the doctors
and that. Yeah, I mean, of course, you know. And I think not only that, but some people, you know, when they've been told they've got limited life left, and they go and sit in the sun, don't they? You know, I mean, there was a famous case recently of someone who did that.
That's really interesting, because actually the going back to the Indians again, ancient India, they actually believed that prana came from the sun. So that's quite interesting, isn't it? So there is something.
There was an extremely famous case not long back where someone had a brain tumour, and they said they had, you know, very limited time to live. So they went and sat in the sun. That's all they did. And read the newspaper or books or whatever. And lo and behold, it went. So, you know, I don't know if you need any factor 40 or anything, but that's a wonderful story, isn't it?
It is, but I think it's also important to note that, you know, you can't just rely on it. I think it basically was his last, he was told that it was terminal and he had no choice, really. So that's why.
I think really, you know, it's like with modern medicine and drugs and that. I mean, you can't say to someone that you shouldn't take drugs. I mean, that's a personal choice of people, and you should always seek professional guidance, really. But if you want to go and see a healer, well, that's perfectly up to your choice, isn't it? And the one thing is, a lot of people don't realise this, but everyone's got the ability to heal with their hands. It ain't just me and you, but it's everybody. Absolutely everybody on the planet can heal with their hands. And if you look at animals, what about animals? They have a power of healing, don't they?
Well, yeah, I think they do. I think it's interesting that I noticed with the cats, you know, through my life, we've had quite a lot of cats. I am the cat woman. And I did notice, you know, whenever myself or my parents were ill, that the cats would actually go and lie on whoever it was that was feeling ill and just stay with them and purr. And I think the effect of the sounding of the purr, the vibration of that, I think, actually helps, as well as the energy. So I think that's quite interesting.
And also, what about children's hospitals? Now, when they often in children's hospitals, they have a rabbit, a pet rabbit or something there. And it's that, you know, it's just that magic between mankind and animals, isn't it? That magic.
Yeah.
And there is a magic there. There's a magical sixth sense there, and the animals can tell if you're not well. And especially for children, I mean, you know, if they're not well, there's nothing worse than seeing a child not well, and the comfort of the rabbit and everything. And it is all healing, isn't it? It's a form of healing. Yeah,
it is for sure. But going back to the placebo thing, I think that's really interesting as well, because I remember having a conversation with somebody about this when we were talking about healing, and they said, oh, you know, surely it's just placebo, you know, and what about, you know, the positive mental attitude? Well, yeah. You know, all these things definitely help. And I think if you can focus your mind to be positive and affirm to yourself that I'm healing and everything else and I'm feeling good, then, yeah, of course it helps. However, you know, that doesn't actually explain it in terms of doing animal healing. And one of the interesting experiences that we had, I know you've had many experiences healing animals, but one very interesting one was where we used to live. Our neighbour came and told us, because we lived sort of on the edge of a wood, and our neighbour came and said, oh, can you come and help, because there's a monk jack deer has got stuck in some iron railings. So we went to go and have a look and help, and this poor creature basically was stuck fast. He could neither go forwards nor backwards, and this dog was trying to bite him and attack him.
Well, I think that's what had happened. The dog had bit its backside,
and it wedged
itself in the fence, didn't it?
So. You know, I was thinking,
don't want the landowner shooting it. That's the last thing we wanted.
No, that's right. And we're thinking this poor creature, because it really looked like it was on its last leg. So we thought, to give it some comfort, at least we gave it some healing. And I was sort of healing on its nose and everything else. And all of a sudden, its eyes kind of went up in its sockets. Mm. And I thought, oh, this is it. He's going now.
He's going
now. All of a sudden, he breathed in. Pulled himself backwards out of the metal railings and off he bounded.
That was incredible. I mean, I don't know how the chest seemed to collapse right in, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was absolutely phenomenal. And then it bounded off. And luckily enough, the landowner didn't get to shoot it. We were delighted, because at least we had given it a chance of life. So that was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I don't know, it would have been terrible had it died or had he shot it.
Mm.
And so, that was one of the examples that we had, was just
but that
phenomenal,
wasn't exactly it? But that wasn't placebo, was it?
No.
Something obviously.
I still don't know to this day, though, how he got out of that gate, out of the bars, because he was wedged solid in there, wasn't he?
He was indeed.
And, you know, his chest just collapsed. And then away he went. It was extraordinary. So, anyway, I'll talk a little bit about some of the healing I've done. I had a friend, Ronald Bailey, who I met. One day I was given some writing through the channeling, and they told me to go to 33 Belgrave Square, and I ended up meeting this wonderful man, Ronald Bailey. And you can hear... an interview with him on my website, which is www.thecockneybard.com. It's worth a listen. Anyway, he talks about an healing with a dog on that particular piece. But I want to tell you about what happened one day when I was at his house. And he suddenly was in a panic state, and he told me that he'd lost all dexterity. He couldn't get out of the chair. And I said to him, what's the matter? And he said, I don't know. He said, I can't use my hands. And he couldn't get up out of the chair. So I said to him, right, Ron, I'll take you to the hospital. You've got to go to the hospital. And he said, no, I don't want to go to the hospital. And I said, but why? And he said, because I want you to give me healing. And I said, but Ron, you know, we can't mess about with that. You really must go and see a doctor or something at the hospital. And he insisted. He said, no, you must give me healing. He said, I know of your healing and I believe in you as an healer. And he said, I want you to give me healing. So against the better judgment, I thought, well, I'll give it a go and see what we can do. And basically, I spent 10 minutes with my hands on the left-hand side, I believe it was, of Ron's head. And anyway, I asked him what he was feeling, and he said he could feel like electrical impulses going into his head. And all of a sudden, he said, I feel tired. And then, you know, and then after about 10 minutes, he said, I'm getting all the feeling back, you know. So, and then I said to him, well, you just rest there and see what happens. And anyway, the next door neighbor, he took Ron to the hospital, and the hospital said, there's nothing wrong with you. You just got a bit of stress. But of course, there was something seriously wrong with him. I believe he had a stroke. But the strange thing about it was, the very next day, Ronald drove me on a 70-mile round trip. Mm, okay, got amazing. All the dexterity back in his hands, and he was absolutely fine. And he lived for a good few months more after that. So that was very, very interesting story. And there's another one where I think it was his half brother, Ron. After this experience, he said to me, my half brother, he said he's got a son in St. Mary's. Now, St. Mary's Hospital is, I think it's St. Mary's, I'm sure it was. It was an AIDS hospital.
Like a
hospice,
you mean?
A hospice, yeah. Mm. Well, I think. And he said that my half brother, he said that he just wants you to go and like see him on his way, really. You know, just give him
some comfort.
To give him some comfort. Mm-hmm. And so I was a bit thingy about that at the time, and all there was the AIDS thing about, well, you know, you mustn't touch AIDS people, and you know, there was a lot of misinformation in the newspapers and press and everything, and on the telly. So I was had a bit of trepidation, but I said, all right, then I'll go and see what I can do for him. And I went to the hospital, and we walked in the room, and there he was in the bed, and he was grey, honestly. Yeah, and he was definitely not going to get better from that. I thought he looked really bad. So I thought to myself, well, what am I going to do? I'm just going to hold his hand. So I sat there and held his hand, and I told him to close his eyes. And then I'll tell you what, it couldn't have been no more than 2 or 3 minutes later. He opened his eyes and he said, let's go down and have a cup of tea. And apparently he hadn't left the bed for 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah, no, he hadn't left the bed for 3 days. He walked on his own, unaided, down to the tea room.
Gosh.
Had a cup of tea, and then went back to bed. And when I spoke to Ron, I think it was, God, I don't know, someone who I spoke to, I think it was not Ron, it was a friend of Ron, had told me that he was still alive some 2 years later, you know. And so, yeah, it was amazing story.
Obviously, you know, when you go into a hospice, I mean, that's...
Well, yeah. I've only got the word for Ronald's friend that he was still alive. But anyway, you know, I thought that was interesting, and it was that was a phenomenal story. Yeah,
that's
definitely.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's probably worth you mentioning as well, before we go any further, how actually you got your or understood your healing ability in the first place, how you discovered it.
Oh, well, I discovered it quite by accident. I mean, I've told the story a few times over the years, but basically I had a friend come around to see me because I told him I'd channeled some writing, and he couldn't believe it. So he said, I'm going to come round and have a look. And anyway, he walked through the front door, And for some unknown reason, I grabbed hold of his shoulder. I think it was the left shoulder. And I didn't know why I did it. And he started rotating it in a clockwise direction. Mm-hmm. And he said, "I can't believe it." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Well, what did you just do?" And I said, "I don't know." And he said, "Well," he said, "I busted my arm in karate." And he said, "I haven't been able to move it above shoulder height." So that was my first experience of healing. And I didn't even know I'd done any. You know, so it was completely by accident. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so, and over the years, I mean, many experiences of healing. I think one of the strange ones was that Ronald said to me, he said, a friend of mine has an all stables in Harrow. Mm-hmm. And he said he'd very much like you to come over and look at a couple of horses of his. So I said, "Well, that's, yeah." And I said, "Yeah, why not?" I said, "I'll come over there and have a look." And he said, "There's also a lady who, she's got a horse there and that's having some problems, and she'd be thrilled if you could do anything." So I said, "All right." He said, "She's a very rich lady, so you never know." She said, "It might take you on your way to fame or fortune." So anyway, I thought that sounds good. So I went over to Harrow and we went to these horse stables, and it was like, honestly, from where I come from in the East End, which was a rough part of the East End, and then suddenly you pull up at this great big rolling hills and all that with horses.
It's Dallas type.
It was rush. It was like absolutely phenomenal. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. And then I'm greeted by this guy.
I thought you were going to say JR there for a bit.
Well, no. But then I'm greeted by this guy called Julian, and he was really posh. And I mean, you know, there was me with my Cockney East End accent, and there's Julian. Hello, you know, really posh. Anyway, he's got this dog in his hands, right? This white dog. I can't think what the dog was. It was a little sort of, I don't know.
Is it like a Maltese or something?
Like a little Maltese or something like that. Yeah. So I just, I don't know why I even did it, but I took the dog out of his hands and I cuddled it, and then I put it down. All right. And then the next minute, the dog was running about like an absolute lunatic all over the field. So Ron said, "I can't believe it." And I said to Ron, "Well, what can't you believe?" He said, "That dog has been running about on three legs for 2 years, to my knowledge." Well, if you go on my website at the Cockney Bard, if you go on the website, Ronald actually tells you this story about that dog and the healing I'd given. So, you know, so I'm glad I've got that as some backup evidence.
I was going to say, so he verifies that.
He verified it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Julian, he went on and he went into the front room and he started playing the piano. So he plays this piece of music and he said to me, do you know who that is, right? So I said, who is it? You know, because I didn't have a clue, did I, about classical music? And he said, "It's Bach." And I said, "Who the F's Bach?" Oh, God. I never even heard of Bach. You know, I mean, I was totally uncultured at the time. But anyway, luckily in life, I have become more than
a bit more refined.
A bit more modern refined, and yeah. I do like a bit of classical music every now and again. But yeah, it's a fantastic story that, and yeah, it's perfectly true. Anyway, but what we did after that little episode, he took me out into the stables, and there was an horse there, and he said to me, "This horse," the vet said, "I can't ride it ever again." And he said, "Got back problems." So he said, "Can you do something for him?" And I said, "Well, I don't think so, but we'll have a go." I said, "I won't promise anything." Never promise. That's the point. Never promise anyone anything. And anyway, what I did, I got, I had no experience with horses before. Mm-hmm. So it was the first experience.
Other
with
than
horse.
Betting slips. Yeah.
Ah, betting slips. Yes, yes. We won't go there, dear, will we? But anyway, what happened was that I put my hand up, because I'm always sort of guided as to where to go. Mm-hmm. When I give healing, and I didn't really know what I was doing. So anyway, but I just got my hand and I put it in front of the horse, his horse's face, and the horse was transfixed, absolutely transfixed,
mesmerized.
He was mesmerized, and he didn't do anything, and he was just standing there. And the bloke looked and he thought, "Well, that's weird. You know, what's happening with the horse?" You know, and the horse, you know, he said to, he explained to me that if you put your hand up to the horse's face, it would shy away or move away. But it didn't. So I went behind the horse. No, well, not right behind the horse, because he warned me about the horses kicking you, so don't go there.
The wrong end.
Yeah, don't get the wrong end of that horse. And anyway, so...
Unless you're a pantomime horse.
Yes, exactly. No, thank you very much. I won't be doing that. And anyway, so anyway, but what basically happened was I put my hands on the horse's back, and I didn't know no more. So I had another horse to do, and this horse was all jet, and I gave him some healing and a similar scenario. But anyway, when I got back home about 7 days later, Ronald phoned me, was extremely excited, and he said, "You know that horse, you know the one who had the bad back." He said he's able to ride him now. So it was an absolutely phenomenal story. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. And the other horse, which was, I think it was called Orjet, And Orjet was able to see a bit better. So it was an extraordinary story, you know.
Because I think Orjet basically was stumbling over the
Well,
bumps,
he was stumbling, yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, that was a great experience that I thought was fantastic, because I'd been told that the lady of Orjet was very rich. And I thought, well, if I've helped that horse, you know, and Ronald did say she promised you the world if you got it better, you know. And anyway, apparently, according to Ronald, I had got it better. And so I was very excited about that. And then a week after that, he phoned me up and he was sounding very disappointed. And I said, what's the matter? And he said, oh, the owner had spoken to him and said that it was the grass that had made the horse better. You know, it or something he'd eaten had made him better. Okay. So I didn't get rewarded for that, but you know, but then you learn a lesson about that. It wasn't for me, was it? It was for the horse I was giving the healing. So that was a valuable lesson in life to learn. But yeah, it was rather disappointing, you know, because I thought, well, I'd made a lot of effort, considerable effort, to put myself out to do it. And I got basically, you know, dirt for thanks, really.
Mm.
Yeah, so it was a bit disappointing. But then you get used to these things, don't you, really? And, you know.
But again, you know, healing of animals, touching horses and the dogs, I mean, it's not going to be...
Not placebo, is it?
Is it? And especially, as you say, I think the dog had an arthritic condition or whatever, you know, that's not going to just... heal overnight, is it?
No.
But one of the interesting ones I remember was my mum. Now, my mum, she was quite sceptical about things, and she had an arthritic knee, and it was really bad and extremely painful. So every morning when she went to get out of bed, it would be excruciating for her, and she went to the local doctor to have some injections in her knee, and it was all really horrible. And at one point we had to wheel her about in a wheelchair because it was so painful. So you came and offered my mum some healing, and my mum was just kind of, yeah, okay. All right then, go on. And so you gave my mum some healing on her knee. Now, she told me that over the next few days, she said it felt really weird. She said it felt like, you know, there was kind of knitting, was her description of it going together in her knee. She said, and it was literally like something was moving about in her knee. So she thought it was quite weird. Anyway, she forgot all about it. And a few days later, she swung out of bed to get up. No pain. And the pain completely went, and it never returned. And so it got her knee better.
Yeah, she was really chuffed with that, wasn't she?
So that was quite incredible to see that, really.
Well, so, I'd like to see, you know, I mean, there's, you know, as I said, I'm a firm believer that everyone on the planet, whether you're the biggest skeptic in the world or the biggest believer in the world, you have the power to heal with your hands.
Mm.
And so you should give it a try, you know. You don't have to know anything about healing. You honestly don't. You know absolutely nothing about it, because no one knows what energy is. And being as you can't tell people they're going to cure them, so if you just run your hands over your partner or something and get them to sit in a chair, close their eyes, and see if it works. Just have a little test of it.
Well, I think the one thing that we can be sure of is that energy does exist. It is there. everything is made of energy.
Ah, yes.
Energy exists in life, and we know that from Newton and Einstein, E equals mc squared. So we know that energy is present. And as I mentioned before, it's not created and it's not destroyed. It just changes form.
Well, I'm not a lover of Einstein, I've got to be honest. But nevertheless, yeah, I mean, you know, I've got a couple of more stories which are rather fascinating. A friend of mine, Maggie, her daughter had a fused neck since she was born.
Right. And, is that arthritis?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was about to have a baby. And she was extremely worried about her neck, you know, with the baby and everything. So, so, let's see what we can do with healing and see if we can make it a little bit better or something happens. Well, a rather strange thing did take place because I started giving her the healing and I stepped back from her. Okay. And all of a sudden, she started rotating her neck backwards and forwards. So, and it appeared that something, rather than me, there was something that was controlling her. And, you know, it wasn't her moving her neck round. She had no control over it. She just started to move it left and right. So that was really strange. It was a strange experience. And you know, as far as I know, she was much better after that and went on, gave birth. You know, I mean, she used to have to turn her whole body. You know, for a girl, it's not really nice, is it, to have to turn your whole body?
Not for anybody,
to look, no, not for anybody to look round and everything. But yeah, as far as I know, that went well. I mean, healing, it's never, you know, I say healing. I have to get this right, the enunciation. you thought I was a healer when I first met you, didn't you?
A healer?
Yeah.
I thought you caught eels.
Catching jellied eels or something, I don't know.
Did you come from the East End? I thought it was to do with jellied eels.
Yeah, you said to me, when I said I'm a healer. And anyway, that's besides the point. But, yeah, so you've got all these stories. But, I mean, you know, there's also stories where, you know, you've given people healing and it appeared to have no effect whatsoever. So there you must ask the question, like if you've got two people that you work on and they've both got the same condition, say they've both got cancer or whatever, and one gets better and the other one don't, is that the fault of you as the healer, or is it something to do with the person themselves, their internal whatever? I mean, you know, it seems like we're all sort of some sort of battery. We're like a battery, aren't we? And so the healing like charges your battery up. And if
it's a bit like jump starting,
well, it's
car,
a bit like jump starting, yeah, you know.
Not quite, but...
And so, no, well, that's right. But you know, I've found healing to come very naturally to me. So, and I call it natural healing, I don't call it Reiki, I don't call it anything else other than natural healing because I believe we've all got it. So that's why I call it natural healing. And but what we're going to do is we're going to do a video or something and demonstrate it to people and show people so that everyone can benefit from the video and have a look at it. And, you know, and hopefully lots of people will start to begin to understand that healing does work. And, you know, what is the example of Mimi, isn't there, in France now?
Yeah.
I've got letters from Mimi. Now, she couldn't speak a word of English, not a word of English.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's interesting, isn't it, actually, that the French word for healing is magnetisme. So they're sort of linking it to magnetism, aren't they?
Yeah,
which I think is quite interesting.
Yeah, magnetisme. And, well, basically, what she said to me, she said that through an interpreter, she said that her husband had been killed in a truck accident. A truck had run him over with no driver in it, apparently. They'd left the handbrake off and it had run his own truck, I think.
She witnessed that, did she?
She witnessed it, yeah. Mm. So that was horrendous. Right. And so from a very young age, she lost the use of her arm, and that was on her hand.
So it was sort of paralyzed.
It was paralyzed,
wasn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely was paralyzed. So, and the strange thing was normally when I do healing, it's normally for about 2 minutes or 5 minutes, you know, maximum. But with her, I was sitting there working for an hour. and I was holding her hand, I was working on the head, and you know, and anyway, something strange was happening because her hand was whiter than Queen Elizabeth I's face. And so when we were doing the healing, you could suddenly see like flashes of pink.
Okay, so blood, it was like the circulation blood, was coming back.
Exactly, yeah, it was so, like circulation was coming back. And it was like, oh God, it was just such an amazing thing to see the fingers start to move. And it truly was a miracle. And we had, someone had recorded it, but I don't know where the video is now. But anyway, I've still got two letters from Mimi. Mm-hmm. And she was more worried about her benefit being stopped than it.
Sounds her a bit end. Like Life of Brian, oh, Monty Python. God, yeah.
Yeah. You're a very naughty boy.
10 shekels for an ex leper.
Oh yeah. So you know, and that was so, but that shows her that placebo wasn't in her vocabulary, because she couldn't speak a word of English, and she was eternally grateful for that. And she lived till she was about 94. Mm. You know, but you know, I mean, having letters from these people, like letters from Ron, and verifying the miracles, which is what they are, they're absolute miracles. But you know, everybody can perform a miracle. So you know, if you read the Bible and you believe in Jesus and you believe in the stories of Jesus and the miracles that he performed, believe me that everybody can perform a miracle.
Exactly. And I mean, if we're all composed of this for want of a better word, divine energy or life force, then we all have access to that, don't we? And we're able to do that ourselves. We have so many abilities that are in a lot of people left dormant and unexplored, because they really are completely unaware of it. Because in modern civilization society, we're kind of told that all of this is just, you know, doesn't exist. It's mumbo jumbo. But if you actually take the time to start researching yourself, you'll actually find numerous accounts
of thousands of accounts.
This energy that surrounds us and is within us.
Thousands of accounts.
And what, is in all life.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that what people feel when you administer the healing.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting one, isn't it? The different experiences. I know myself from my own experiences, when I first went to the spiritualist church and received some spiritual healing, and I was a little nervous, to be honest, because I wasn't sure what they were going to do. But then, you know, after I relaxed and I shut my eyes and the guy was working on me, it actually felt a bit like a bit tickly, like electricity. That was my experience of it. And it was a very definite feeling. It wasn't just, you know, a load of nonsense. It was a very definite sensation of like sort of almost like an electricity running over my body.
I can remember giving my father healing. I mean, my mum and dad, bless them, they're both passed away now, but they didn't hold a lot of sway for the healing and everything. But I said to my dad I would give him some healing just as a tryout, you know. And he was laying on the floor and I gave him the healing. And the next minute he was completely out cold, you know. And my mum said, quick, get the body back. But basically, I just put him to sleep, you know. So that was one of the things. And, you know, when you're giving people healing, sometimes they say, oh, I feel really hot, or I feel really cold. Pins and needles is a classic one, isn't
it?
That
they sometimes they see colours as well. Which
I always say to people, close your eyes so that, and I don't normally have music, but music helps. If you want to have some nice music, not the Rolling Stones.
No.
Just some meditative music. Some meditative music. Get some meditative music on in the background, or some sort of gongs or something. That always helps. And basically get people to close their eyes and and see what happens. You know, that you're right. People see colours, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the feelings of hot and cold is quite normal. Feeling very tired after a healing session is another one.
And I think also, you know, with the spiritual healing, so we're sort of moving from how it's sort of slightly different to, say, Reiki. With the spiritual healing, they can use spirit guides or people that will actually come in and also assist with the healing, which is quite interesting. Yeah. So,
and fair belief in, you know, that there are spiritual guides or spiritual beings that are actually channeling the healing through them.
Mm.
So yeah, that's very interesting. As I said about Ari Edwards, and there's a lot of, you know, it's not just a good side to the healing and everything. You know, we're giving it the right side, the just side, and everything. But there is a bad side to it, isn't
there?
Well,
I think as in any sphere of doing anything, unfortunately, you get the frauds and you get the bad people that are attracted to it. Because of course, some people, you know, they're in a very vulnerable state. And they put all their faith and trust into people.
For sure, yeah.
And unfortunately, not everybody is...
Promise them the world, you know, I'm going to help you, I'm going to make you better. And
because we know, I mean, John of God's quite a famous example of that.
He was brought on the scene by Oprah Winfrey, wasn't he?
Mm.
Mm.
And unfortunately, he abused... what he was doing,
absolutely,
which is terrible. But yeah, unfortunately, there are people that exist that will abuse people. So I think really you have to use your own discretion, and always be aware, you know, with these people, and don't really put yourselves in a vulnerable position.
No,
I think it's probably
not
the best
definitely
advice
not
with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of issues with these kind of people. And of course, when you're exploiting people, whether that's taking shed loads of money off of them for it, and, you know, I mean, people say, well, should you charge for healing? And, you know, and that's a personal choice, isn't it? I mean, if someone wants to charge for healing for their time, there's nothing wrong with that, is there? So...
Well, I think that if they're doing that as a full-time occupation,
yeah, they've got to earn a living,
I think, rather like
haven't they?
A doctor or a nurse charges for their time, then why should not the healer also do that? Because they have to feed themselves, clothe themselves, and put a roof over their head for their family. So, you know, I think that's a fairly fair...
Yeah, and I think if people out there have an ongoing problem, irrespective of what it is, and you're having trouble getting rid of it through medicines or, you know...
Well, I think there's nothing to lose at the end of it, is it? And as I said, you know, when I mentioned about the Egyptians, also the Greeks with the therapeutai, which are the healing priests... in the temples of Asclepius, you know, they very much looked at the person as a whole. So they wouldn't just say, here's a tablet, off you go. They would actually try to heal the whole person to that body back into balance and harmony.
Yeah.
It was interesting with the people that went to the temples of Asclepius, because oftentimes they would go and actually they would sleep on the floors of the temple, and there would be snakes slithering about. It sounds a bit scary to me because I'm not so keen on snakes personally. But they would then go to sleep and have a dream, and in the hope that Asclepius would come and visit them and either do something to them to heal them, or at least tell them some information about their ailment. And of course, the next day they would then talk to the therapeutai priests about this experience. And so all in all, it was a sort of a very general overview of healing people.
I think it's very important as well for people to realise you don't have to believe in it. You don't have to have any belief. You know, I mean, I've worked on the most sceptic of people and they've said it's amazing. So you don't have to have any belief. So
no.
You don't. That's it. It's simple as that. And we've all got the ability... And I urge everyone to give it a go, give it a try. You know.
And there are various different modalities of that are interconnected with the energy healing as well. I mean, we sort of look at sound healing as an example. I mean, that's vibration, isn't it? And, you know, when we're sort of getting into the modern science and the modern medicine of it, we are actually going into ultrasound and sound healing and frequencies. Which is very interesting, isn't it? Because these are all things that the ancient people in various different cultures actually understood and were utilizing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I think when Nikola Tesla said, you know, about the think in terms of energy, frequency and vibration, you know, they're all interconnected, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
No, it's well, very interesting.
I think we've covered about everything for tonight, do you?
Well, I think in brief, yes, because as I said at the beginning, it's such a vast subject. I mean, we could talk for literally hours on it. And I think at least it gives a sort of an overview of roughly what it's about. But I think the thing is, it's... try and experiment at home with your friend or your partner and just sit down and relax and just close your eyes and put your hands either on the person or just away from their body and just think about that universal energy or spiritual energy or divine energy, whatever you would like to call it, because it has no religion or religious connotations. It's just life. A life force. And just try it. Just close your eyes and try that and ask that this energy goes and balances the person that you're healing and helps them. And you just never know, you know, what you might pick up and what you might feel. Ask the person that you're giving the healing to, what are they feeling? And you may be surprised actually that what they come back with.
Oh, absolutely. And do be careful where you put your hands, obviously. Well, you're putting your hands on a stranger. Do be careful. That's there could be a large suing.
That's why I said a friend or relative.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Close friend. Oh, God.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, you've had many experiences, haven't you, of healing various different people. And I mean, I've always been constantly amazed. You had a lady when we visited America who had carpal tunnel syndrome in her wrist, and she had difficulty opening bottle tops and jars and everything else. Yeah, so you carry on with that one then, because that's quite interesting.
And basically I gave her healing and it must have been about 2 minutes later, wasn't it? She was undoing every bottle top in the house.
She was indeed.
And her husband was so excited by that, he gave me $100, didn't he? Mm-hmm. It was very kind of him, wasn't it? But yeah, that was an amazing story. So yeah, you never know, you know, give it a go. That's what I'm saying. Give it a go and do some research on it and look at all the aspects of healing, like, you know, Reiki and all other stuff. And then, but realize that it's natural. We've all got it. And that's it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We all have it. And whilst in the modality of Reiki, you have to be attuned and you have to be given symbols. It's not, unless you particularly want to go into that particular model of healing.
Yeah.
It's not necessary to do that because we all have that. We all have access to the universal energy. It is in us. It is in everything. So it's not quackery. You know, as I said, if you can change energy, you can't create it, you can't destroy it, you merely change it from one state to another state.
From one form to another,
exactly. So, you know, we see this, and I think probably in some of the sort of auric photographs, although it's a little bit do we accept it or not, but we do see in some of these photographs the colours of people's so-called aura. And I think what's interesting with that, I thought about this recently, is the talk of the Joseph's coat of many colours in the Bible again. Is that talking about the aura? So maybe. It's all food for thought. Anyway, as long as I think if it gets people thinking and researching, then it's all brilliant stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think we'll end up there for tonight, and we're just doing a shorter show this evening, but I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. And just to say, you can check us out on the allensinvestigate.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, and we're broadcasting live on the United Public Radio Network 105.3 and 107.7 FM from the beautiful city of New Orleans. And you can also find us on Roku. So fantastic stuff. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, everybody. And see you soon.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.